Welcome to the Wampa's Lair podcast. Deep in the bowels of the frozen ice caverns of Hoth, our hosts, Carl LeClaire and Jason Hunt, have been frozen upside down to the cave ceiling with nothing to do but talk all things Star Wars. So make yourselves comfortable, but keep a wary eye out for trouble here in the Wampa's Lair.
Your listeners to the Wampa's Lair podcast. I welcome you. The seventh episode it is. Carl and Jason about their top five planets they will be discussing. For 800 years have I waited for this podcast to return. Get on with it, you must.
Well, it looks like we have an impatient Yoda. We've been gone since before Christmas, and Yoda's impatient for us to get back to it. So, hello, everybody. Welcome to the Wampa's Lair podcast. I am Jason, and with me, as always, is our esteemed director of the Wampa's Lair podcast. We have Carl LeClaire.
Jason, thank you. How you doing? I haven't talked to you in, like, I don't know, since 2011. Man.
I know. Been, like, last year, it seems. A year ago.
I know. I was reflecting back upon my last year, and I was like, I haven't talked to Jason since last year. And the Wampa's Lair is getting a little cold without us, you know? I mean, we need to get back in that. And I like how Yoda just showed up, tonight to just, let us know. Even he's getting a little impatient. He just wants an episode of the Wampa's Lair, so I guess we better deliver, you know?
We better.
What's that, Jason?
A lot has happened, you know, since the last time we recorded, you know, Christmas, New Year's, I moved to a new state.
That's right. Starting a new school. You're such a busy, busy young man, Jason.
I know.
So, you know, tonight Jason's joining us from Tucson as opposed to San Antonio.
So. Yes. A whole nother time zone to deal with in our Skyping.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. Oh, what the joys of technology, though. I love it. You know, you're another state over to the west. I'm still in the same spot, but yeah, we're still here talking just like it's no big deal. I love it.
All right.
But, for our listeners, you know, we hope you had a very nice Christmas and a good New Year. I had a really good time. I mean, it was great being off work for 2 weeks. I loved that. So I had a good break. What about you, Jason? Did you have a nice holiday season?
I did. Christmas was nice and quiet, you know, family and stuff. And then right after Christmas, I went out, sort of camping with some friends. We had to, like, a little cabin that one of my friends has access to. So that was real nice. And then day after I get back from that, I'm moving. So driving from Texas to Arizona. So
jeez.
It was busy but fun. So
that's great.
Pretty settled. Just gotta start displaying all my nerdly Star Wars stuff around my room again. So
oh boy. Good for you.
It feels almost bare without all my action figures all over the place. So
now I gotta ask you, did you get anything for Christmas that was Star Wars related in any way?
My brother made me a display box.
Oh, very cool.
Yes, that was real neat. So,
nice.
My sister didn't get me anything Star Wars because she bought us all tickets to see Trans-Siberian Orchestra. So that was amazing.
Great. Yeah, you told me about that. We did get a chance to talk last year right around Christmas, which was nice. So that was good.
Yeah.
Great.
Well, how was your Christmas?
It was nice.
Aside from not having to deal with snot-nosed kids.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was a good time, you know. Went back to New York to see my family and had a nice little time, so it was good. It was a lot of fun.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I think our listeners might be getting tired of us reminiscing about Christmas and want us to get on with some Star Wars.
That's true. They've probably already used the fast forward button, but let's save them their time.
All right.
So, had a nice little lightsaber
match. To start
matchup.
Us off, just to remind you all, our lightsaber matchup that we left you with last episode was Jedi Master Plo Koon versus Lumaya, Dark Lord of the Sith. Lumia, Lumaya, however you want to pronounce that. Dark Lady of the Sith. So, this is a very interesting duel. First time we use an expanded universe character in our duels. So, I'm sure, Carl, you've got a couple thoughts about this one.
Sure.
But before we get started, I've got two responses from our listeners.
Great.
Both of these are from Facebook.
Great.
Jazz Kopek Rethor, I apologize profusely if I am mispronouncing your name. He says, I've got to go with Plo Koon on this one, though mainly because he's one of my favorite Jedi, and I've just put together a Plo Koon costume. Though with her light whip, Lumaya could be a tough cookie. But honestly, I don't think she would be up to a Jedi Master's skill with a lightsaber. Then again, with her training at the feet of Darth Vader, she might have some tricks up her sleeve. Also, after she'd been shot down by Luke, she had some cybernetic enhancements. Would they have impeded her movements in the same way as Anakin's skills would? Were diminished by becoming more machine than man? Who knows? Also difficult to say because we haven't seen either of them battling with lightsabers. Well, we've seen some Plo Koon in the Clone Wars. But I kind of imagine Lumia as more of a devious thinker and outsmarter than a warrior. So it looks like he goes with Plo Koon on that one.
Good.
One for Plo Koon, zero for
just a
Lumia.
Quick little stab out. Jazz is actually a great guy. I don't know if you remember meeting him at Fan Days. He was the guy who came from, I think Holland or Norway. Norway.
Norway.
Yeah.
I briefly met him, but you got to hang out with him, so.
Yeah, he's a great guy.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, he was really cool. He was showing me all the pictures of his Plo Koon costume he was finishing off. It looks great, so of course he's got to go with Plo Koon.
Of course. our other response was from Brian V. Klein. He says, been thinking about this latest duel, and it's a tough one. I'd have to give a slight edge to Lumia since she held her own against Grandmaster Luke in the Legacy of the Jedi books. And we didn't really see Master Koon do much in the way of dueling in the films or Clone Wars. Plus, I really think the light whip is pretty cool. So, we got a one-to-one matchup here, Carl. Are we going to split it again, or I don't know. I know what I picked, but I have no idea what you got.
I know.
So I'll let you go.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna have to go with Lumaya. And the reason I say Lumaya would win is, again, you know, like everybody said, you know, we haven't really seen Plo Koon in action. And obviously, we've technically never seen Lumaya in action, as she's an EU character. But in the books, you know, it's pretty clear she's a formidable opponent. I mean, she holds her own pretty well against Jacen Solo in the Legacy series. She holds her own against Darth Kitus. She, like, you know, like Brian mentioned in his post there, you know, she takes on Luke in the Legacy series, and you know, she almost beats him at one point. She holds her own against Mara Jade, and these are all very accomplished Jedi. So, based on that, you know, literature there, it seems like she's a really formidable opponent, and she uses that light whip very well. And as far as Plo Koon goes, you know, I mean, we can, as a Jedi Master, we can assume that he's obviously quite powerful. But, you know, look at it in the context. I mean, he's a Jedi Master during the Clone Wars, and then he's killed in the Clone Wars. He never really went up against any, you know, Jedi or Dark Jedi or Sith or anything like that. And, you know, I'm sure he's a formidable fighter, but I don't think he'd stand a chance against Lumaya. You know, and then again, this is based on mostly from the experience she has with Luke in the Legacy series. You know, she almost beats Luke, who is probably one of the, you know, he is probably the strongest Jedi ever in the Order. I mean, he might even be able to compare him to Yoda. And the fact that she can hold her own against him just tells me, like, Plo Koon is definitely he's probably a good fighter, but I don't think he's got what it takes.
Very, very interesting. I'm going to give you my thoughts on each of the characters before I reveal my decision.
You are so mischievous, my friend.
Lumia, I never know how to pronounce her name. Half the time I call her Lumia, half the time I call her Lumia. Anyways, that Sith chick. with the Light Whip, as long as she holds you out at the end of that, she's pretty formidable. But and she's obviously very skilled to go up against Luke, Mara Jade, Jason Solo. But in the duel with Luke, if I remember correctly, Luke is very much trying to control, you know, the way he attacks and things like that. So if he completely unleashed himself, I don't think it would have been much of a contest. Hmm. But she is very, very skilled. You know, she was trained by Vader. She's been around for, you know, quite a while, thorn in Luke's side for years. Plo Koon, very thoughtful, methodical Jedi. Powerful, I'm sure. But I would think what he would do in a duel against Lumia is he would stand at, you know, out of the edge, you know, deflect mostly, and then whenever she made a mistake, he'd zip up in there underneath where she's effective with her Light Whip and take her out. So if she were to make a mistake, I think Plo Koon would have the battle won. But I am going to, I don't like to do this because I love the Jedi, but I am going to have to give the duel to Lumia, because she is tricky, she's dirty, she's underhanded, she's always got some sort of backup up her sleeve. So I am going to have to put it at a 3-1, Lumia over Plo Koon.
All right. I so, like it. Good. We are in agreement.
It's good. Because last time we were on the other opposite sides of the fence, and
I know.
I was like, that's kind of scary going against Carl like that.
No, I liked it. It was good. Yeah, that was a good one last time. So, obviously, stay tuned to the end of the episode. We'll be introducing yet another lightsaber duel, which should be a lot of fun.
Exactly. But we have our topic for this week, our seventh episode of The Wampa's Lair, Lucky Number 7. And our topic is our top 5 planets.
Yes.
And I haven't heard a lot of people actually talk about this before.
Yeah,
so
I haven't either. Now, I will.
It'll be interesting to see.
Yeah. I do have to make a confession. I did hear a very similar topic to this on Dark Empire Radio. They had done something a while back where they talked about their favorite planets. It was a little bit of a different way of going at it, I think, than we'll be doing tonight. But that's kind of where I got the idea. I was like, oh, that'd be a great idea. I love so many of the planets. So I do, you know, I don't want to be a plagiarist since, you know, I'm a teacher and all, and I make sure my kids credit their sources. I do have to say, in all honesty, that I am, you know, I was inspired by Dark Empire. I'm not lifting it. I was inspired. So there you go, Lord
Bruticus.
Yes.
Yes, Lord Bruticus, take heart. We do not plagiarize, Lord Bruticus. We don't want to have the wrath of the brutal one upon us.
We do not. Yeah, we got to get him on the show eventually now, too. That's right. He's a good guy. Well, he's not a good guy, cool. But he's a good guy.
A good person.
Good person,
I think.
There we go. Yes. Or is he?
Or is he? That is the question.
Indeed.
He always keeps us guessing.
Yes. So, let's get into another topic, the top 5 planets. But we gave ourselves some credence here and allowed ourselves a few honorable mentions. Just, it's sometimes difficult to narrow down. I think there's about a dozen planets just in the films, so to narrow them down is a bit difficult. So I have just a couple quick honorable mentions, but I know you have one as well, Jason, so I'm going to give one of mine, then I'll let you go ahead and give yours. If that's all right with you.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Sounds good.
My first one was just very briefly, it's Camino. I really liked Camino. Basically, just I love water and I love the ocean. And I just thought it was great to have a planet that's essentially just one big ocean. I just thought it was a really cool planet, a very dark planet. And you know, it was the one planet in the prequels that really stood out to me as very interesting. So I have to give a quick, just a very brief mention to Camino.
Oh. Wow. This will be interesting because my honorable mention is also Camino.
Wow. How about that?
That is really rather interesting. It's and I had to give it an honorable mention because it is such a unique planet. I mean, we do have a couple of other ocean planets in the Star Wars universe.
Right. Mon Calamari is one.
I mean, it's not the only, you know, ocean planet in the Star Wars universe. There are a couple others, but it's unique in the fact where it's almost always raining, and so it's, you know, there's water everywhere, you know, where, you know, the cities are elevated above water, but there's water coming down, and it's, you know, a unique secretive planet because, you know, the clones were being, you know, created there 10 years before anybody knew about it.
Right.
So it's just a really unique, mysterious, almost forbidding kind of planet. Seeing it in the Attack of the Clones and then expanded upon in the Clone Wars, it was kind of a really interesting planet. But that is my honorable mention.
Very nice. I had just one other one, which I'm sure will come to as a shock to some people and maybe even to you, Jason. But my other honorable mention is Tatooine. And shockingly, this is not in my top five. I was really surprised when I made my top five, and I was like, "Oh my God, where's Tatooine?" But it's just, you know, I had to go with what was first to pop up. But I'm not going to say much about it, as I'm sure you, I don't want to say you are, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's in your top five. But that is an honorable mention for me. I mean, Tatooine is the birthplace of Star Wars in a sense. You know, from the binary sunset that made, you know, the film so popular, to, you know, it's the birthplace of Anakin and Luke, the main, well, it's not the birthplace of Luke, but it's his, you know, where he grows up. And it's just, you know, it's just such a popular planet, and we see it in so many of all of the films except for, what, which ones don't we see it? Episode 5, it's the only one we don't see Tatooine in. And it's even in the, it's in the EU a lot, so, I mean, it's just a great planet. And just one more quick one is, I gotta mention Earth. I think Earth deserves an honorable mention because Earth is essentially where Star Wars is filmed. So without Earth, we would not have Star Wars. So I think that deserves,
of course,
an honorable mention. So.
Yes, Earth, you know, I'm not on Tatooine, I'm not on Hoth, I'm on Earth. So I suppose that does, deserve an honorable mention. and actually, because of the way I decided on my top five planets, Tatooine did not make it into my top five.
How about
or
your honorable mentions? Okay, how about that?
It made the first cut,
okay.
Which was like nine planets, but it didn't make it past there. So, I mean, other than the fact that's where a lot of story takes place, Tatooine's pretty boring.
I agree. The only thing about Tatooine I love is Mos Eisley. I think the Mos Eisley Cantina is awesome. I think it's such a cool place. But other than that, it's nothing but moisture farms. Boring.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you gotta watch out, because there's always Cryat dragons and Sarlaccs about waiting to eat you, so...
Exactly. Exactly. It's a hostile planet, so...
Very.
Good.
Very.
Well, just,
right. Well, I suppose I shall jump right into my number five.
Yes, please.
If you have nothing else you want to talk about.
No, not at all.
All right. Well, the way I sort of, and I guess I'll put this little, you know, caveat out there. The way I selected my planets is, you know, how, you know, what sort of interesting things happened on the planet, what takes place on the planet, how the planet is set up, you know, would I want to visit that planet, things like that. So that's kind of how my list was formed. And my list will sort of refer to the fact that I do watch the Clone Wars. So some of my planets will be you know, expanded on by the Clone Wars. So that's how number five is, and that's Silicomai. We saw it briefly in Revenge of the Sith. That was where Stassi Lee was shot down on her speeder bike, and then we saw it in the Deserter episode of season two of the Clone Wars. And I just like the planet. It's kind of unique. It's got obviously we saw in the film, got some kind of weird rock formations and stuff like that that are kind of cool. And then it seems to be a lot of ranch land, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, people go out, they farm, they, you know, spend a lot of time outdoors, and it's sort of a place where, you know, you might retire or something, you know.
Sure.
I don't know, I just kind of like the idea, you know, if I was in the Star Wars universe, would I want to go there? You know, it's got those unique rock formations and stuff that I think are kind of cool. It's got, you know, rolling hills and things like that. It's very rustic, and I kind of like that. So that's my number five, Silicomai.
Great. Yeah. Well, I have no comment about it because I know very little about it. So I'm not going to say anything. good. Nice pick. I mean, I know which planet you're speaking of, but I don't know very much about it, so...
That's about all I know too. So okay. Planets aren't generally expounded upon too much in the Star Wars universe unless you go there multiple times.
Right.
So.
Right. Yeah. Well, my number.
But anyway.
Yeah. My number five would have to be Coruscant. I think Coruscant's one of the coolest planets in the Star Wars galaxy. And I remember the first time I ever heard about Coruscant was back in the mid-90s when I first started reading the EU books, and I was reading the Rogue Squadron series, which is basically where we find out how the Alliance takes Coruscant from the Empire. And, mm-hmm. you know, when the planet is described, I'm like, wow, this place sounds awesome. A whole planet that's just a city. It's like, I couldn't even fathom what that might look like. I mean, it's like New York City, but it is a planet as opposed to an island. I mean, it just sounds phenomenal. And then, again, you get to explore it even more in Shadows of the Empire, which, you know, does a great job of describing, you know, when Luke and Dash Rendar and Chewie and Leia are going through the underworld of Coruscant to try to, you know, get to Sheezer and everything. It just sounds like such a cool planet. And, you know, the first time we get to see it visually is in the Return of the Jedi Special Edition, which, you know, in that original cut in 97 when they extended the closing scene, and you get to see Coruscant, and they, you know, pull down the statue of Palpatine, and, you know, and then obviously George Lucas has revamped that scene since in the Blu-rays with, you know, he includes the Jedi Temple still there in the background. But, I mean, when you first saw that planet, you're like, wow. It's like, it's almost like sensory overload. And... you know, it was just so cool to look at. And then obviously we get to see a ton of it in the prequel trilogy. And, you know, I like your slant on it. You know, would I like to visit it? Would I like to live there? Whatever. You know, I would not want to live in Coruscant, but I would love to visit. It's kind of my same mentality about New York City. I like to visit New York City, but God, you'd have to pay me millions to live there. and, you know, I mean, it's such a cool place. Coruscant is probably unlike any other planet you're going to go to in the Star Wars galaxy. And it's just such a neat-looking city, you know? And especially in the upper part of the city, one of my favorite scenes in Attack of the Clones is the scene where they go into that bar scene. And I always found it funny the first time I saw it. I was like, wow, this is like the exact opposite of Mos Eisley. And because I remember when I first saw that scene, I was like, man, this is kind of weird. Like, this is nothing like the original trilogy. This is nothing like the cantina at Mos Eisley. But it's like, well, no, duh. This isn't the back worlds of the galaxy. This is like, you know, this is New York City. We're not in some little camp in, you know, backwoods Georgia or something, you know. And no disrespect to Georgia. But, you know, I mean, there's going to be a difference when you go into a bar in the backwoods of Georgia and, you know, a swanky, you know, upscale club in New York City. And I just thought that place was so cool. And the type of people that live on Coruscant is just, it's so unique. I mean, it is. It's nothing but a city, which I loved it.
So, yeah, Coruscant did not make my list. Okay. It is a very interesting city to look at, but and I like the fact that the Jedi Temple is there, but it's just too busy, too crazy, too much for me to want to go there. It's just all city, traffic going all the time, 24/7. You know, and then unless you're making a good amount of money, you never see the sun.
Right.
So,
right.
Because the buildings are miles high.
Yes.
And I mean, it's a great place as far as, you know, the story is concerned and things like that. But I don't know. I'm the type of person where it's nice to have the convenience of the city, but I like to have access to the out of doors.
Right.
So that's, and that you'll probably see that a lot in my, the rest of my list. So
good.
Just so you know.
good. Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, great pick. Not on my list.
Sure. Well, then good. I want to hear more of your list. So what's your number four?
Number four, Mon Calamari.
Okay.
It's been, you know, talked about a lot in books that take place after Return of the Jedi. We finally actually got to see it in the opening story arc of the Clone Wars this season, which was kind of cool. You know, it always talks about how, you know, the water is crystal clear. People come for tourist stuff all the time. It's got cities that float on the water and cities under the water. It's just, and then later on, it becomes very instrumental in a very instrumental location as far as where the Rebel Alliance and the New Republic start setting things up. And I believe in the New Jedi Order, after the Yuuzhan Vong take over Coruscant, that becomes the new headquarters of the Galactic Republic. And then of course I can't, you know, not mention Mon Calamari without saying it's a trap. Running into Admiral Akbar on Mon Calamari would just make my day, you know. Any planet that is the birthplace of Admiral Akbar has to be on my list. So, Mon Calamari is my number four.
Wow, I cannot fault you for that. That is a great pick. But no, it's actually not on mine. I'll make a confession. All of mine are from the films. But enough about that. But yeah, I love Mon Calamari as well. And, you know, maybe I just didn't sit down and think hard enough when I was making my list. I guess when I picked my list, I just picked out what, you know, which planets really jump out at me. But Mon Calamari is definitely a great one. I remember, the first time I ever heard of it, you know, again, like you said, obviously Return of the Jedi hints at it with the Calamari race, but I didn't hear much about the planet. But the first place I remember reading it was the Jedi Academy trilogy by Kevin Anderson. And that was always my favorite EU trilogy. And to this day, I still think it is. I even put it above the Thrawn trilogy by Timothy Zahn.
And whoa!
I know. We can get into that some other time. I'm sorry.
That's almost sacrilege.
But I just think, you know. But we get to see Mon Calamari in the I believe it's in the second book, Dark Apprentice, and you know, Admiral Dalla, you know, it attacks Mon Calamari, and it's just this huge ocean planet. And then we obviously get to see it for the first time in the Clone Wars series this particular season. And it looks like, you know, it's very similar to Kamino, but it seems happier than Kamino because it's not raining all the time.
It does.
I would trust a Calamari over a Kamino person any day, you know. So
yes, I would trust the Mon Calamari, but just, you know, be aware of the Quarren.
Yes,
they're treacherous.
That's true.
You know, but if you go to Mon Calamari, stay with the Mon Calamari.
Yes,
don't, you know, maybe visit the Quarren, but don't stay there.
Right. Right.
But yeah, I feel like a travel agent.
Here's where you're gonna want to go next. Try Mon Calamari. The seafood is great. Yeah, no, that's a great pick. It's such a cool planet, you know. It reminds me of a way cooler Otto Gunga, or however you pronounce that, the capital of the Gunga
yes.
city.
But Ota Gunga.
Yes. So great pick.
Thank you.
So I'm going to go
for you.
Yeah. So for me, number four is the ice planet of Hoth.
How fitting.
I could not mention Hoth in my top five planets, as we are the Wampa Slayer. You know, the thing I love about Hoth, I think, is quite literally, you know, Wampas and Tauntauns, oh my, you know. two of my favorite creatures in the Star Wars galaxy. Oh, geez, there's a show right there for the future. You know, some of our favorite creatures. But I love the Wampas and the Tauntauns, and they're obviously indigenous to Hoth. And when I was a kid, I always liked Hoth as well because it reminded me of the North Pole. And what kid doesn't love the North Pole? You know, I figured, you know, probably between the Wampas and the Tauntauns, you know, Tauntauns were probably the first reindeer. So I could not.
The Wampa was the abominable snowman.
Exactly. Exactly. I was fascinated by this planet just covered in snow and ice. And also, obviously, a lot of the reasons I picked the planets I pick is based on, you know, when I was a kid. And when I was a kid, I could always reenact the Battle of Hoth every winter. Now, Jason, unfortunately for you, you've probably never seen snow.
I've seen it.
Okay.
I've seen it, but only for, like, little bits at a time. there was, like, one time last winter it snowed in San Antonio. It was, like, you know, barely a quarter of an inch of snow, maybe, in some places. But everything shut down. Yeah. School shut down. A lot of businesses shut down. My Whataburger didn't. After going out for a quick walk around the block with the family, because nobody else was going anywhere, I went to work. but by, you know, by 11 o'clock noon, it was all melted and gone. So,
sure. Yeah. Well, unlike you, I grew up in upstate New York, so I was incredibly used to snow. We always got a ton of snow every winter. I mean, so I could relate to Hoth. I could reenact Hoth outside my own backyard. And always, one of my favorite things to do when I was a kid was my brothers and I. My brothers were not huge into Star Wars, but they, you know, they commiserated with my love and my obsession. So they would play along, and we used to play the Battle of Hoth outside in the woods. And you know, we would use our sleds as you know, T-47 snow speeders, and you know, go jetting down the hill, pretending like we were being chased by AT-ATs. You know,
nice.
So it was a lot of fun for me, because when I saw Hoth on the screen, I could go outside and become part of Hoth. And I always liked that. I liked, you know, that connection to Hoth. And also, one of my favorite locations is at Hoth also. I always liked Echo Base. You know, Echo Base is a really cool looking station. And, you know, Hoth is a nice little secluded space. And it provides a sense of security to the Rebel Alliance. I mean, you know, like when, you know, the probe droid sends back the image of the, you know, the shield generator. And Admiral Azzel is, you know, he said, it could be smugglers. It could be, that's it. The Rebels are there. You know, it's like, you know, there's not supposed to be, you know, Captain Pete's the one who tries to call Admiral Azzel out. He says, you know, but sir, Hoth is supposed to be devoid of humans. I'm trying to do accents. I should really stop you. That's your department. But, you know, I always liked that as a kid, too, because Hoth seemed, although it's extremely cold and extremely, like, dangerous, I mean, really, like, Wampas can come out of nowhere, as we well know. But, you know, it's because of Echo Base, I always felt like Hoth was such a safe planet. And, you know, it kept them safe from the Empire for a time. So,
right.
That's my number four.
Well, that's a good number four. It's not on my list.
Okay.
Probably because I've grown up in the desert my entire life.
That's true.
You know, this is another way that Carl and I are so diverse. I can't stand long exposures to cold. I get cold very easily. I am not acclimated to the cold. I would prefer to be hot than cold. And too much snow, I think, would just throw me for a loop. So, no, it didn't make my list, but it's great that we were able to mention it here on the Wampa's Lair podcast.
Yes. Well, Jason, I'm biting at the bit. What is your number three? I'm very excited about your list. It's very different.
Yes. My number three is primarily seen in the films, so this will be a nice little change of pace. You might have a lot to say about this one. My number three would be Naboo.
Okay.
Naboo, it's, you know, it's beautiful, it's lush, you know, it's got all sorts of lakes, it's got, you know, rolling plains, it's got swamps with underwater underwater cities, you know, it's got beautiful architecture in the big cities and things like that. It's definitely some place that I would really consider as a honeymoon destination, you know. Keep that in mind, Carl.
Oh, if I were to mention that, I would get a lightsaber to the chest.
Maybe we shouldn't have your girlfriend listening to this show after all. but it's such a great, you know, beautiful, peaceful place. Not necessarily peaceful in the fact that the people that live there are generally, you know, peaceful people, but it's such a peaceful environment. And it's got multiple environments. You know, it's not one of those, this planet is desert, this planet is snow, things that happens a lot in Star Wars. It's got a couple of different environments. They connect, but it's, you know, there's changes. You know, you've got the Naboo who live out on the great, you know, plains and things like that. And then you got the Gungans. They live in the swamps and underwater and the lakes that go through the core of the planet. The fact that you can go through the core of the planet is even cool in and of itself. And the Gungans are kind of cool. I mean, I like the Gungans. I, you know, don't shoot me, people, for saying that. They're kind of a cool species, you know. Warriors, Jar Jar's an exception. But I do like Jar Jar, and I will talk about that on another podcast, because this is neither here nor there. But it's just it's a great location. It's, you know, got all the information happening in the galaxy at your fingertips, but you can sort of just get away from all of that if you wanted to. So sure. That's why number three is Naboo. Great. So,
well, actually, Naboo is not on my list. But yeah, I mean, another great pick. It is. It's got kind of everything, you know. We've got that. It's such a lush, beautiful planet. It. I think that is actually why it's not on my list, is because I find it too tame. Everything is right in its right place. I mean, Theed is such a beautiful city, but it's to me, it's so, I don't know, almost archaic and I find it boring. I mean, it's over the top beautiful that it's like you're trying too hard. I feel like this is the place for the British. Theed would be perfect for the British. Like, hello, I am so much better than you.
yes, Victorian era Britain.
Yes, and so, you know, while I find it beautiful and all that, I find it too tame for me. And the Gungans are very cool. What did you say?
You'd probably spend most of your time with the Gungans, you know, down there underwater where all the sea monsters are. So
right, yeah, I really enjoy, you know, I enjoyed the trip through the planet corn. I think the Gungans are a very cool race. You know, they remind me of a very indigenous tribe. They're, you know, much like the Native Americans here. You know, just a very interesting race, minus Jar Jar. I am not a Jar Jar fan, but that's neither here nor there either. but yeah, I do like the Gungans. I think they're great. But yeah, that's a great pick.
All right, awesome. What is your number three? I'm curious.
Well, my number three is very similar to your number three. I picked Endor. Also a very lush planet. A different sort of lushness, though. I find it much more primal, much more wild. I think that's what attracts me to Endor. Again, I have to confess, it's connected to the childhood stuff again. I grew up in a rural part of upstate New York, and, you know, like I mentioned just a few minutes ago, we had a lot of woods in my backyard. So when I was a kid, after I saw Return of the Jedi, again, this was something I could go outside and reenact, you know. Again, Tatooine, I mean, it's a cool planet, but I don't have a desert to play around, and I couldn't connect with that. Whereas Endor, I mean, you know, throughout the spring and the summer, I could run around outside and pretend I could hear the Ewoks chirping in the trees. Not to mention the fact that they made those two great Ewok movies. Let's not forget those. I mean, those were phenomenal. You know,
I never saw those.
Caravan of Courage and the Battle for Endor. If you have not seen the Battle for Endor, you haven't lived. Okay, great movie.
I guess I haven't lived.
Jason, you're going to have to give me your mailing address so I can mail you a copy of that DVD, because you need to watch this.
Okay. I will do that. It would be nice to get mail in a new city.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody loves getting mail. But we can do that after the show.
Right. Yeah, I don't want everybody sending me random stuff.
Right. Hello, Jason.
go away!
Sorry. No, quite all right. And I just, you know, I think one of the things I also love about Endor is these, you know, the massive trees. Endor, to me, you know, their trees are like skyscrapers. They're so large. And again, this is filmed in the Redwood Forest in California, Northern California. And, you know, I've always wanted to go there. It's just such a cool, beautiful place. And to use that as Endor is so great, to think that this is an entire planet of, you know, lush forestry, but it's very primitive. And I really liked the Ewoks. And to me, the Ewoks are, you know, again, they're somewhat similar to the Gungans. And they were also, you know, the Ewoks were obviously something called into question back in the late 80s. You know, some people were like, what is this, teddy bears? But I've always loved the Ewoks. I think they're so cool. And one of the things that attracts me to the Ewoks and to Endor is there's almost this, like, inherent spirituality to the Ewoks and to Endor itself. I mean, it's like a sacred planet. It's such a wild and untamed place that it's a great place to tap into. You know, the Ewoks see things as very spiritual, and, you know, that always attracted me as a kid. I do have to mention one more little tidbit from my childhood, and hopefully I'm not boring people, but I used to love Endor as well, because every Christmas when I was a kid, I used to play with my Star Wars figures under the Christmas tree, because to me, the Christmas tree was the only thing big enough to look like a tree from Endor. So I used to play with all my Return of the Jedi action figures under my Christmas tree, pretending that they were in Endor. It was just so much fun. So that's
pretty cool.
Yeah, that's my number three.
Endor didn't make my list, but it's something that could have been an honorable mention if I had decided to do that. I do like Endor. I do like the Ewoks. I don't see them as teddy bears. I see them as half Wookiees. Because they're not exactly as cuddly as teddy bears, because they would probably stick a spear up your gut if you got too you know, snuggly with them. Unless you're the one that's hugging Han's leg. But no, Endor is a great planet. I would definitely love to get to the Redwood Forests in California and say, I am in Endor, you know. And, you know, it's got possibly one of, you know, a whole third of the best battle in Star Wars takes place on Endor. So, you know, I do consider the end battle of Return of the Jedi to be the best battle in the Star Wars universe. You know, it takes place in three locations: in space, on the Death Star, on Endor. Right. And that is, you know, one of the great things about Endor. I would love to visit Endor, go camping and hiking through Endor. But you do have to watch your back, because Ewoks aren't the only things that go bump in the night there.
That's right. Yes, watch Caravan of Courage. You'll find that out.
I've read a few things. So, you know, take your guns. But anyway, my number two, and I'm actually going to make a confession here. I just, like, as we were recording, switched the order of my number one and my number two planets.
Ooh, very good.
So, yes.
This would have been Jason's number one, everyone.
Would have been. These are two very close planets. I mean, both very close, in depending on what my mood is or whatever, could be favorite planets. And a lot of these planets probably could, you know, change with other planets that aren't on my list and things like that, because there's so many unique places in Star Wars. And, you know, Star Wars is something that's always, you know, evolving and adding new things and things like that. So, and planets aren't exactly some place that you, something that you think about a lot when you think of Star Wars.
Right.
Other than locations to do amazing things with lightsabers and blaster guns, you know. But I switched it around because it is very similar, a very similar locale to my number three. So now my current number two would be Alderaan.
Okay.
It was, you know, we only saw it briefly in Revenge of the Sith, and then we saw it in an episode of the Clone Wars in season two, Assassin, where Aurra Sing attempts to assassinate Padme. But what I have seen and some of the history that I've heard and, you know, read about Alderaan and some of the expanded universe, it's a very, you know, it's a cultural planet. It's got a lot of culture, a lot of history. It seems, but it's very welcoming, and it's got gorgeous mountains. I do love mountains. And then it's got, you know, the wide open plains and rolling hills that I do like as well. But it's got civilization there too, and it's, you know, it is very similar to Naboo. It's maybe not quite as wild as Naboo, with the fact, you know, with the Gungans and things like that. But it's a very nice, relaxing place from what I've been able to tell. It's got a lot of history, a lot of culture. And actually, we did see Alderaan in one of the cinematic trailers for the Old Republic game, the one that follows the Jedi, the female Jedi with the double-bladed lightsaber, and the troopers running through the forests fighting the Sith. So it's got a long, violent history, and only recently have they become pacifists. It would be somewhere that I would like to go and just explore the history and the culture there and things like that, and still be connected to the galaxy at large. So that is my number two.
Good. Yeah, that's a nice pick. That's not on my list either. You know, I think my equation of Alderaan is, it's basically if the hippies had won. And had won out in the 60s. You know, it's a very peaceful place. Or in a kinder way, I'll you know, steep into my area of expertise just a little bit. The Gospel of John and the Letters of John, they're composed by a group known as the Johannine Community in the early church. And they were a very peaceful group centered around love and peace. I feel like the Johannine Community would have found a pleasant place to live on Alderaan. Alderaan is a very, you know, peaceful place. But, you know, nothing in particular stands out to me. That's really all I have to say about Alderaan.
other than the fact that it got blown up.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, yes. Well, yeah.
I had nothing. Very sad.
Right. Indeed. Poor Leia. I always loved that thing in Robot Chicken where Luke's crying on the Millennium Falcon after Obi-Wan dies, and Leia says, "Oh, are you upset that the poor old man you just met yesterday died? Oh, well, excuse me, my whole planet was just destroyed." You know? I always loved that. I thought that was hilarious.
touche, touche.
Yes, indeed.
What is your number two?
So my number two is, and like you, my number two and my number one can fluctuate depending on the mood I'm in, depending on what I'm, you know, currently paying attention to. But as of the last few days, I'm gonna have to put number two is Bespin. I really like Bespin. I'm a huge Empire Strikes Back fan, so it's very easy for me to fall. It's very easy for me to fall in love with the Empire Strikes Back locations. I think what I like about Bespin is, you know, it's, as Luke describes, it's a city in the clouds. And I like clouds. Clouds are fun. That's always my favorite part about flying, is when we're going up through the clouds. I feel like I'm in Bespin. And I just, I feel like, you
in
know,
your own little cloud car.
Exactly. And you know I mentioned cloud car in my top five ships, so I mean, I do love the cloud car. I think Bespin just seems like a fun place. I mean, it's kind of like a resort city in the sky. Or, excuse me, that's Cloud City. So Bespin itself is nothing but a gas planet. It's similar to Jupiter, except not chaotic. I mean, Jupiter is always, you know, crazy thunderstorms and stuff. But Bespin is a gas planet, so there is no surface. There is no probably indigenous species to Bespin. But it's very cool how, you know, all Bespin has is, it basically is its gas. It's Tavana gas. And, you know, just based on this one resource, this planet isn't useless. I don't know if maybe that's what I like about it. I just think it's cool that this one planet, which seems kind of useless, it's got nothing except gas, yet it still manages to have, like, this awesome place, Cloud City, where people can live and, you know, make a life for themselves based on this one simple resource. So it's like even Bespin has value. You know, it's this one planet that seems to have no value, yet people make a living out of the one thing that it can offer. And I like that. It's kind of saying you don't need to have everything. Bespin is very one-dimensional, yet there's still a way of making a life there. And I love Cloud City. I've said this a million times, if I could live anywhere in the Star Wars galaxy, I would love to have a condo in Cloud City. You know, wake up every morning and look at clouds. Go to bed every night and look at clouds. You know, it's a very one-dimensional place, but it seems very cozy and relaxing. And you know, the weather seems just perfect. It always seems like it'll probably be a comfortable, you know, 55 to 65 degrees. So it's not hot, but it's not hot, you know. And I like that. You know, you can wear a cape and it'll be caught in the breezes. You know, I mean, it's exciting. It's a fun little place to be. You know, I think so. Bespin is my number two.
Well, it made my first cut, but it did not make my list.
Okay.
And I think the reason why I didn't make my list, I do like Cloud City, Bespin, because when you talk Bespin, you're mainly talking Cloud City.
Right.
And I think maybe that's part of why I decided to not put it on my list, is because the planet itself, you know, you can't go on it. You know, it's gas. You'd go through it if you were able to withstand the G-forces. But Cloud City, it's not very big in comparison. I mean, it's big. It's a city. You know, it's got a lot of places you can go and do things. But out unless you're working. It is a nice location. I would want to visit there. But it is very one-dimensional. And outside of visiting and maybe the occasional, you know, trip out there to see the clouds, it's not someplace I'd go on a regular basis.
Sure. Yeah, so. You got me there. You know, the planet itself, probably not the most ideal. Because like you said, you can't even stand on ground. So obviously, I'm obviously referencing mostly Cloud City. But again, you know, I'll hold to my point. I love Cloud City. I've heard Bespin, for that matter. I've always connected with it. When Empire Strikes Back was the first movie I can remember seeing as a kid, and Bespin was the first place to jump out at me. I was like, I love this place. I want to be there. And again, you know, I'll hold out to that point that, you know, it's this huge planet with only one resource, yet it still has value. And we do see Bespin in the EU a little bit. Not a ton, which is fine with me. I don't need to see any more of it. But, yeah. So, Jason, it is time for your number one planet in the Star Wars galaxy. And I have been through so many I've been shocked with everything you've picked. Shocked in a good way, I might say. But I'm sitting here on the edge of my seat waiting for your number one.
Okay. Well, my number one is probably became my number one because of the location I'm in now. It is a planet that is not in any of the movies. We did see it in the Clone Wars. It's referenced a lot in the EU and the comics. And that is...
Say that again, Jason.
My number one planet is Ryloth.
Okay.
Home planet of the Twi'leks. And it's desert. It's a unique planet because in the EU it talks about how Ryloth doesn't rotate at all. And so, but I'm not sure if that's accurate anymore after George Lucas put Ryloth into the Clone Wars. I'm not sure. But there's you know, wide expanses of desert. But we saw in the Clone Wars series, there's also areas where there's like canyons with vegetation, and you know, they have cities that are built out of the stone and things like that. And it's I don't know, it's wild, it's kind of, it's very rustic, and it reminds me a lot of the architecture out here in Arizona and the desert and the mountains and things like that. And so I guess maybe the fact that I sort of feel like maybe I'm in Ryloth, maybe helped catapult this to number one right now. But that is my number one, and it doesn't help hurt that the Twi'leks, who are native to Ryloth, are a very interesting and unique species and culture in the Star Wars universe. You know, other than humans, they're the most popular species in the galaxy, so
sure.
They're everywhere.
Indeed,
you got humans and Twi'leks. So
great, yeah.
So yes, Ryloth.
Yeah, I honestly don't have a whole lot of comments about Ryloth. It doesn't stand out to me in any particular way, which is fine. I think that's. But I do like what you said though about how it's your number one, and I like how you especially just switched it up even tonight. You know, kind of as a result of that's where you're living. I think I'll say a few more comments about this after I say my number one, but I think it's interesting, you know, like you pick your favorite planet based on where you currently live. I mean, I think as Star Wars fans, we have such a connection to the Star Wars universe that even where we live, we feel a connection somehow. We look for some type of connection to Star Wars. You know, I've been living in Boston now for 4 years, and Boston has a tiny bit of a Bespin feel to it. I feel like occasionally I'm in Cloud City when I'm actually in downtown, and it's always cloudy in Boston. You know, you feel a connection to these movies that you would love to be a part of. And I think for that sense, I think that's awesome that you picked Ryloth. So,
yeah. Yeah, that is a good comment, and I'll have some stuff to say about that after you do your number one. But I'm curious now.
Yeah.
I've surprised you with a lot of my choices, and your choices are some things I may have put on my list. But you know, it's the order that you put them in is very interesting. I figured Cloud City would be high on your list, but other than that, your list has been pretty much a surprise. So I'm curious to see what your number one is.
Okay, so my number one is Dagobah. I love Dagobah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I hate Dagobah.
I know you do. I remember you saying that.
This is a shock.
Yeah.
A shock.
It reminds
you have
me.
It's made kind of, me speechless.
Yes. It's like when we did our top five ship show and Chris said his least favorite ship and that happened to be your favorite. I loved it. It was great. But yeah, my favorite planet
awesome.
Is Dagobah, and it is funny because as a kid, I really didn't like Dagobah. It kind of spooked me out. It was very creepy. But as I've grown older, and again, this obviously has a lot to do with connecting to the scenes in the film. But the scenes on Dagobah with Luke and Yoda are probably the most adult scenes in Star Wars, in my opinion. And I think as a result, what's going on with Luke on Dagobah is a lot of what's been going on in my own life in the last few years. And this, you know, this come to terms with who you are and what you're doing with your life. But Dagobah seems to be the perfect place to do that. The planet itself is a direct symbolism of what's going on in Luke. He's, you know, he's facing his own darkness. It's a cloudy, mysterious place inside of himself. And he's literally doing that in a place that is physically what's going on inside himself. And I really like that about Dagobah. Dagobah is, you know, I mean, it's spooky, it's dark, it's a swamp, it's probably very muggy, which surprised me because I hate muggy weather.
Yeah, it's.
But at the same time, you know, it's there's just something about it. There's something you can't figure out about Dagobah. It's just one of, you know, I know I've mentioned this before, and I don't mean to keep doing this, but one of my favorite scenes in all of Star Wars is the scene right after Yoda is leaving Luke's camp. It's when we first meet Yoda, and he's, you know, he's got Luke's little lamp, and he's going, come, come. And you have, you know, the image of Yoda, you know, it pans out, and you just see Yoda in the middle of this huge swamp, and there's all this fog, and these, you know, really old-looking trees. I mean, there's just something about Dagobah that it reminds me of, again, I'm sorry to those of you who, you know, hate religion and stuff. I do apologize, but this is what I know, this is how I think. But it kind of reminds me of that, you know, the desert experience of Jesus. And, you know, in the Gospels when he's tempted by the devil and stuff. You know, he goes into this dark place, and yes, literally it's a desert. But it's this dark place of questioning. And I think Dagobah is that planet in Star Wars. It's the place where Luke figures out who he is and you know, starts to realize that he is meant to be a Jedi. He can become a Jedi. And Dagobah is just this inviting place where it's like, you know, everything is gray. Nothing is black and nothing is white. Everything is gray. It's this perfect middle tone. And it's also very earthy. It's very indigenous. I mean, there are no, as far as we know, there is literally no civilization there. And just like Kamino, it's a hidden planet. Yoda, you know, I mean, we find out through some expanded universe that Yoda is going to, you know, get rid of any records of Dagobah from, you know, from the Coruscant, you know, star charts or whatever, so that he can stay hidden. I mean, it's a hidden planet, and you know, he does this on purpose. And it's a sanctuary planet, you know, and you know, it's a place where Luke goes to become himself. And I love the colors of Dagobah and the feel of it. It's a place very mysterious, and it's a place where you can question and you can hide away. I mean, Luke literally he retreats there. You know, I mean, he retreats there. Nobody knows where he is. Nobody would be able to find him. And I like that about Dagobah. It's a great place to go to get in connection with yourself. So that is my number one pick.
Yeah, that is a very good pick and a good explanation. It's Dagobah is almost more of a character than a planet in the Star Wars, you know, universe. As a planet, you know, looking at it just as a planet, it's very uninviting, very disgusting. I would never voluntarily go to Dagobah. But as a story point, it is very well used. It's, you know, it's the way that George Lucas and Irving Kirshner collaborated to use Dagobah, and the way it looked and the way it felt and the way it behaved in the film was amazing, and some of the most impactful scenes of all the films take place on Dagobah. And I, like I said before, I really do think it is, when you get down to it, it is almost more of a character than a location, because of everything that happens there and everything that Dagobah experiences with Yoda and Luke. So That's a very good explanation for why it's your number one.
Well, thank you.
But yeah, like I said, I hate Dagobah. I would never want to go to Dagobah. I would contemplate my future out in the middle of nowhere on like Alderaan or something like that. You know, maybe wander the deserts of Ryloth to, you know, start contemplating and getting, you know, finding out who I am. I'd go wander the deserts or something. You know, that's what I've grown up with. I've grown up in a desert my entire life, sure. You know, for the most part. I mean, I'm back in Arizona because I lived here when I was like five. I moved to San Antonio, Texas, which, you know, it's more hill country, but it's very hot and very dry most of the time.
Yeah,
but you know that's why I like outdoors, which is more back here in Arizona. There's a lot of outdoor access and things to do outdoors, hiking and such. And where I'm at, Tucson has like a couple, like three small mountain ranges that surround it. So it's a very beautiful place as far as desert is concerned, and I think. Like you were mentioning before, it's really great how we pick a lot of our favorites in Star Wars, whether it be planets or whatever, based on our own experiences, based on where we live, and how we relate to things in Star Wars. And that is what makes Star Wars such a remarkable franchise, a remarkable experience. almost a lifestyle at this point, you know, for people like us.
Sure.
And Star Wars is just, it's amazing in that it invites you to, you know, connect with it and invites you to be a part of it. And so that's what makes a lot of these things such fantastic and amazing. That's why these lists are so fun to do, is because we get to see, you know, you get to learn more about your friends and find out, you know, their likes, their dislikes, and where they grew up and how they grew up, because, you know, you connect to these places, you relate, and that's the great thing. And I know you wanted to bring more up about this, so that's, I'll hand that back over to you there.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And, you know, just this episode, which I thought, you know, this has been a lot of fun episode, but I like you said, you know, I learned something about you just based on something like this. And I think that's very interesting. Again, you know, for people like us, and probably for, you know, a lot of the people who are taking their time to listen to us, who obviously must share our passion for Star Wars, you know, Star Wars is more than just, they're more than just films. They become like a lifestyle, as you say. They become part of who we are. And the locations themselves, the planets that we get to visit, both in the films and in the EU, you know, we connect to those in some way. And I think that's something that's so powerful. I mean, it's fun to make these lists, but really when you think about it, you know, we can learn something about ourselves and we can learn something about each other through what we like about Star Wars and where we go and why we like what we like. I remember when we were at Fan Days, you were with me. I'm pretty sure you were with me when I was looking into that one poster. It's just a picture of Dagobah. Were you with me for that? Do you remember that picture, Jason?
Yes. Yeah, yes. That was a really unique picture.
It was. And it was basically...
I did like that picture.
I did too. And unfortunately, it was a little bit out of my price range. But, you know, it's just a cool picture just of literally just Dagobah. There's nothing... There's no characters in the picture. But like you said, you know, Dagobah kind of is its own character. And, you know, there's something just about that... Just looking at that image of the swamp scene on Dagobah, like, it drew me right in. It's like, I want to be there. And you know, the fact that Star Wars, again, can create these planets that we can identify with and that we even see ourselves somehow being part of, and, you know, the locations we're living. Like you said, you know, oh, now that I'm in Tucson, I feel like, you know, maybe I'm in Ryloth or something. Or, you know, I've said, you know, I'm in Boston now. I feel a little bit like I'm, you know, in Bespin. Or if I go visit, you know, friends down in New York City, it's like, oh, yeah, now I'm in Coruscant. You know, I mean, we identify places from these films in our own lives. And I think that's, again, it just speaks volumes of how powerful these films are. I mean, these locations tell us something about ourselves. We connect to things just, you know, again, obviously, yes, we connect to the story. Yes, we connect to the characters. But even take all that away, we still connect to the scene, to the scenery, to the images, and that we can learn so much about ourselves. And that, to me, is great, great filmmaking and great art. So, you know, this has been a lot of fun talking about these planets, Jason.
It has been. It has been. It's not our longest podcast, not our, you know, as in-depth podcast, but we did get a little deep here at the end.
Indeed.
But it's nice. It's really nice. Really nice to be back in the saddle, so to speak.
I know it. Yeah, holidays are so busy, and I was like, man, I haven't even thought about Star Wars all that much lately. But I was like, you know what? I get to talk to Jason tonight. It's going to be a good time, as it always in the Wampa's Lair. So yeah, this has been a lot of fun. But we have a couple of quick announcements. And Jason, did you have anything else you wanted to say on the topic tonight?
No, I'm good.
Okay.
Good. Let's wrap this up.
Yeah. So just a few things, Jason and I are going to bring up tonight before we get to the lightsaber matchup. Just a quick heads up to our listeners that we're going to be doing our first giveaway within the next month or so. We have a product that will be announced at a later date that we'd like to give away to our listeners, probably through some form of trivia, some type of trivia question. More details to come, but please stay tuned. So maybe you can take part in the first Wampa's Lair giveaway. So I'm very excited about that.
Yes, yes. Free stuff is always good.
Exactly, and free Star Wars stuff is even better.
Exactly.
So, but anyway... Yeah, Jason, I'm going to let you go ahead and introduce our lightsaber matchup for next show.
All right, sounds great. The lightsaber matchup that we will have for our next podcast, we are pitting Jason Solo from the New Jedi Order against Savage Opress, the brother of Darth Maul that was introduced last season in the Clone Wars, and will be returning most likely for the finale of this season of the Clone Wars. So that's going to be exciting. So Jason Solo from the New Jedi Order versus Savage Opress, brother of Darth Maul.
Very good.
So,
yes. So this is obviously another, a little, you know, we had Plo Koon and Lumaya. Which Lumaya is our first time dipping into the EU. This is our first time totally dipping into the EU. So we hope that our listeners enjoy the EU as much as we do. And since we're mentioning the EU, it's obviously pertinent to mention the new podcast joining us on the Star Wars Report website. Star Wars Beyond the Films is a new podcast that they've Mr. Nathan Butler and Mark Herleman have just started up over at the Star Wars Report. And again, you know, we are now part of the Star Wars Report as well. So if you don't already listen to the Star Wars Report podcast, we highly recommend you get on that because it's a great show. They do a lot of, Bethany and Riley and Mark do a lot to help us get the Wampa's Lair going. So, you know, we invite all of you to please check out StarWarsReport.com. You know, there you can obviously listen in on the Star Wars Report. You can check out us, the Wampa's Lair. And now again, you can check out Star Wars Beyond the Films. It's a new podcast being brought to us by the Star Wars Report, and should be a lot of fun for those of us who enjoy the EU. And I listened to most of the first episode, which was a lot of fun. Nathan Butler and Mark are great guys. So it sounds like it's going to be a great show.
Awesome. I have not started listening to it. I will be downloading it this evening, hopefully. And it'll be good because I've sort of lost touch with the EU over the years, being in college and everything. So it'll be nice to have a little, you know, sort of primer, a little sort of, you know, hey, welcome back to the EU type of podcast to listen to. Because I know there's a lot of EU podcasts out there, but I'm just so busy with a lot of things. I don't listen to a lot of podcasts. I wish I had time to listen to more than I do, but it'll be nice to have something part of the Star Wars Report family to listen to and, you know, get sort of caught up on all the happenings in the expanded universe of Star Wars.
Absolutely.
The ever-expanding expanded universe of Star Wars.
Yes, exactly. But yes, and so just a reminder to our listeners again, you know, you can obviously download our show on iTunes, which a lot of you do. But, you know, please be sure to follow us on Twitter. You can find us at twitter.com/Wampa's Lair. You can also find us on Facebook at the Wampa's Lair Podcast. And also feel free to email us at wampaslairpodcast@gmail.com. So, again, we invite you to, you know, obviously give us your feedback, whether it's on Twitter, on Facebook, or via email on our lightsaber matchups. But even more than that, we want to open up to you guys to give us some, you know, possible show topic ideas. If there's anything out there you'd like to hear us discuss, you've obviously heard us, you know, this is our 7th episode now, you know kind of what our forte is, what maybe we're good at, maybe what we're not so good at. So, you know, give us some feedback of what you'd like to hear. And, if you know, obviously if we're comfortable talking about it, we'd love to cater more to our listeners. I mean, we hope you're enjoying what we've already done, but if there's something else you'd like to hear from us, please let us know, whether it's on Twitter, Facebook, or via email. So
yeah, and maybe if you give us some good ideas, maybe you could be a guest and be a part of the show. That would be fun as well.
Absolutely.
We like talking to other people about Star Wars. You know, the more the better. It's more the merrier. Star Wars is not an exclusive club, and so we like to include as many of you guys as possible.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So great. Well, Jason, it's been a lot of fun. I'm going to let you, of course, do the honors of signing us off.
All right. Thank you, everybody, once again, for listening to the Wampa's Lair Podcast, Episode 7, Top 5 Planets. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. And my name is Jason. For Carl, we will see you next time in the Wampa's Lair.